Hey guys, this week's episode is brought to you by Handy Paint Products, the folks who make those red plastic paint accessories like smarter pails and roller trays.
And it turns out that a bunch of contractors weighed in on something they wanted and Handy made it happen. More on that later, and you can find Handy Paint Products anywhere that you buy paint.
I'm John.
And I'm Sherry.
We like home stuff.
We like talking.
And we like the occasional game show sound effect. So welcome to Young House Love Has a Podcast, where we have deep and not so deep conversations about DIY, design, and life at home.
Today we're talking about our approach to holiday decorating and how we switch things up seasonally at home. We also tiptoe into the whole smart home craze, and we discuss the value of sitting down together for a family meal.
Hey, Sherry.
Hi, John.
Happy almost Thanksgiving.
I know. I'm expanding my stomach enough to eat everything. Every day I drink lots of water. I'm stretching it out.
Break out the sweatpants already.
Exactly.
Well, before everyone catches their planes or heads on the road, although the driving is a great time to listen to podcasts.
Always thinking about podcasts.
Just a note. So let's kick it off.
They're already listening to this podcast, though.
Okay. Well, what's new with you?
What's new with me is kind of a big thing in my life. My mom has moved. She moved to the West Coast, so it was not a little move. You know, like, we're New York, New Jersey people. We're East Coast people. Now she's a West Coast person. And I have to admit, it's going to be fun to visit her. And the weather is definitely going to be better than it was where she lived because she was always getting all the storms and she was tired of it. So now I guess my mom is a snowbird. Is that what they call this?
Snowbird is someone who only lives there part-time.
I just like calling my mom a snowbird. I will continue to call my mom a snowbird, but not in the correct sense of the term. But anyway, she is asking me for my advice. And I'm like, really? You want my advice? Because I always thought our styles are not the same. But what has been really surprising to me is I'm sending her links of things I like. Like, well, I like this table and I like these chairs and I like this sofa and these rugs. I've been sourcing everything. And the interesting thing to me is she really likes a lot of the things that I like. So I think I expected our design circles to be like, if you picture a Venn diagram, the circles don't even touch. Like, there's hardly any overlap. We both like traditional rugs, so maybe there's a slight overlap. But what I'm finding is in her new sort of approach to California living and having a smaller, you know, she's downsizing. She is more modern than I expected. And she likes cleaner lines suddenly. I send her three tables and one has curved legs and I assume she'll go for the curved legs and she likes the modern one.
This is just the Hollywood version of your mom.
It really is. It has been really fun for me because I love helping everyone with decorating. But it has been interesting to me to see my mom ask for my advice. Number one, that was surprise number one. And number two, actually take my advice is surprise number two. Because you know when someone asks you for your opinion but then doesn't really listen? I thought it might be one of those scenarios. But it's all coming together slowly. There's still a moving truck that's making its way over there with existing furnishings. But I'm excited to see it come together. And the sort of bonus for everyone listening is that I have been spending so much time sourcing all of the things, chandeliers, rugs, chairs. And while I was doing it, I was like, I should make folders for these on the website. So now we have a new tab at the header of the website that says We're Digging. And if you click it, it has all the categories and you can see all the things I'm sourcing. So if you click on rugs, there's probably 25 rugs, 10 of which I sent to my mom, one of which she bought. And I was like, well, I'm here. I've already done all this research. I'll make a page. So.
And also on the bottom of that page, it has a link to that thing we mentioned last episode that has a master list of all the We're Diggings mentioned on the podcast.
Right. So they're separated by category. So you can click into home decor or click into rugs or chairs. And then one says from the podcast. And that has all the master list of everything that we're digging from the podcast, because it is definitely true that it's hard to keep these all straight. And now you can find everything right there.
It'll also come in handy because my aunt and uncle are moving here to Richmond, actually. And she's already asked you for like some suggestions as well, too.
Yeah, it totally surprised me. She said, when you have a moment, would you mind putting together a list? And in my head, I'm like, what could this be? You know, before someone says something, you're always guessing. And I thought it was going to be a list of electricians and plumbers or just like helpful home people to have on hand right in Richmond. So I was literally waiting for her lips to form the word electricians, plumbers. And then it was rugs and chairs. And I was like, oh my gosh, I'm doing this for my mom. So I've actually created this page for you. So I'm going to send her a link and I'm going to actually email her a few local places she can go because I love seeing things in person too. And it's just funny. Two people have asked for my help in like the span of 3 weeks.
And it's surprising. Never get asked for decorating advice.
Nope, never. Nobody trusts me.
Nobody wants your opinion. Well, my what's new is actually, I don't know, maybe Thanksgiving related, because I came across this article a long time ago from the New York Times about eating meals together, family meals, The article is called Where's the Magic in Family Dinner? And I'll put a link to it in the show notes at younghouselove.com/podcast. It's basically just this person kind of like ruminating on the idea of the importance of families gathering around to have a communal meal together. The approach she takes in the article is, she says, in her family, she tries to get everyone around the table so that at the end of the day, they all gather and have some time together, but it never sort of materializes into that quintessential, let's all have a friendly conversation and recap our days and connect. She says a lot of times it's just like shoving food in your mouth, trying to get kids to behave and keep people at the table. And then it's all over before you've really...
Eat your peas.
Right. It's like all over before you've really talked to one another. So she was feeling down about not really fitting this perfect family dinner idea. So she started looking into like really what is the value of people coming together? Because I don't know about you, Sherry, but like growing up, I have very distinct memories of like what it was like coming together and eating dinner with my sisters and my parents every night, like where we sat at the table.
Yeah.
And
yeah, we had our places. We had dinner traditions where we always ate together at home, but a lot of nights we were in activities like piano lessons or karate. And so on those nights we went out to eat. A lot of times it involved pizza. So we were psyched. Like I, as a child, was not like, oh, I love family dinner. I was like, yeah, a night that's not family dinner and I get to go to Marco's Pizza in New Jersey.
Yeah, and she points into the article that like there's lots of studies that say like having this foundation for kids where families come together like has lots of benefits. Like it helps their mental health, it helps them do better in school, like makes them, you know, less likely to get into drugs and all that stuff.
It's like a checkpoint.
Yeah, and so she was trying to figure out, am I not giving my kids these benefits because we're not having this great bonding time together? And I think the conclusion that she draws in the article, and again, you guys can read for yourself, is sort of that it's not about necessarily the quality of the time had at the dinner table. It's about just the having that moment where everyone's together.
So was she saying she's just letting herself off the hook and she's deciding it's just as good? Or is it like scientifically that it doesn't matter what you talk about, just doing the act of getting together?
No, she found a study that was saying, and this is probably getting too deep into parenting philosophy, but like successful families that have two key ingredients to parenting, which is like authority and also warmth. They said, actually, this desire to have everyone come around the table checks both of those boxes because it indicates that a household has enough kind of rules and routines that they have the kind of the authority.
The expectation that you will come and sit and eat dinner with everyone.
And she talks a lot more about adolescence, so probably kids older than ours, you know, the fact that you're not letting your teenagers just go off and, you know, grab food with their friends, the fact that there's an expectation that you come back to the central family at some point.
Right. My demonstration of authority is like, stop putting your chicken on your head.
Right, exactly. We have a lot of authority at our dinner table. Stop touching your brother. Stop touching your brother. No, stop touching your sister.
Don't put each other's hands in your mouth. Thank you.
Yeah. And then the warmth part of it, the fact that you want to come together and spend time together, it presumes that people who want to have these dinners also have that warmth aspect. So I think she's kind of asking the question, is it cart before the horse? Like, it may not be the quality of the dinners you have, but the fact that you're trying to have this routine.
Right. Well, it's certainly better than just throwing your hands up in the air and being like, forget it, eat on the sofa.
Right. Which we do sometimes.
Right.
Well, I think, though, we do try. And I think especially since we've renovated the kitchen, like, we really wanted to try to think about how we made that a space where we can have family dinners and we can cook at home more often. We've been so in the success of cooking at home.
Yeah.
But I think the article made me feel better because we do end up eating a lot of our dinners at the island. You know, mm-hmm. I think we had this idea that maybe that would be like breakfast and lunch and then we'd actually go to the dining room for dinner. But we tend to just go to our dining room when we have people over.
Yeah. So the island seats 4 people very comfortably. Our kids love sitting in those chairs. If we say it's time for dinner, we don't say go sit at the island. We say it's time for dinner and the kids just run and sit in their chairs at the island.
And they sit in the middle and we sit on either end so we can kind of all see each other because my height is not blocking anyone.
Right. We bookend them.
Oftentimes it's helpful because if we're in the kitchen, it's easy for one of us to hop up and like refill drinks or, you know, go grab another spoon. The first one got dropped on the floor.
Right.
So overall, I found the article really interesting. And I think I went through a similar journey of the author where I felt some pressure released on like having to have these quintessential family dinners that I remember in my head growing up and that, you know, it's okay if they don't happen every night. It's okay if it's not fantastic conversation. I mean, you don't get fantastic conversation out of a 2.5-year-old anyways. And, you know, that it's not always this grand meal, that sometimes it's carry out or a quick, you know, spaghetti or whatever. So just some thoughts before we all sit down for probably the biggest meal of our year. So happy Thanksgiving, everyone.
Gobble, gobble. Also, side note, any Italians out there who never ate turkey growing up? Because I didn't learn that that was weird. We had a ham and we had lasagna. And that's what we had every single year. It wasn't until we got to be older and people started getting married and the in-laws were like, what? There's no turkey? So now my cousin makes a turkey. But it used to really be just lasagna and ham and like some cold salami and stuff. It was like the opposite of a normal Thanksgiving. But I didn't realize that as a kid.
Cold salami?
Salami is delicious.
Well, I know you like it, but for Thanksgiving?
I don't know. It was accompanied by a warm ham. It was fine. And lasagna is very cozy. Think about it. Lasagna is comfort food.
Oh, no, I don't argue with that. Okay, don't you have an update?
I do. I have a really good update. Okay, so this comes from Kara. She's a listener and she emailed me and she basically said she loves listening to the podcast, but when she hears something, she wants to see where others fall on that or sort of as a group discuss or somehow exchange information for how you feel. For example, when she heard the White Walls episode, she wanted a poll in the show notes that said, hey, do you like White Walls? Do you think they're stark? Do you think they're boring? Do you love them? And she said, maybe then you could review them and do updates in future podcasts.
Yeah, so, we actually did that for like the second episode when we were talking about scrubbers versus tidiers and how you like to declutter.
Exactly.
We just kind of lost track of that idea.
Fell off. So yes, we love this idea. I wrote right back to Kara and I said, perfect. I want to do it for sure. So now every time you hear a podcast, go to the show notes and look for a poll that you can weigh in on. And we will do updates because we do think it will be interesting to see how you guys fall on certain issues.
And also you can always tweet at us at Young House Love or respond to the comments on Facebook or Instagram. So that's another great way to put your thoughts in about something that we covered on the podcast that might become an update in a future episode. Well, and speaking of multiple choice things, I have a quiz for you. As most of you know, this is the portion of the podcast where I get to quiz Sherry. I give her a category of things in which most are real, but one is fake, and she just has to tell me what's real and what's not. So this week's category is called Shake It Off. It is not about Taylor Swift.
That was going to be my guess.
I know what you're thinking.
I was like, oh crap, I don't know any of those songs.
This is your quiz. Are haters going to hate, 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 love, or hate? Which is the fake?
I feel like love is the fake.
Oh, you got it. Perfect answer. Okay, moving on. Next segment.
I know more than I thought about Taylor Swift.
No, this is about the Shakers.
Uh-huh.
Are you familiar?
Are the Shakers going to shake, shake, shake?
Well, that's how they got the name. No, I'm talking about the like 18th century religious group that settled in New York.
Okay. I don't know that much about the Shakers, but I'm always willing to learn.
Well, they're the people that inspired the Shaker style cabinet. So.
Right. I feel like they were good at craftsmanship, right?
Yes. Yes. I don't want to get too deep into the like history of them because I'm not a historian, but you know, they have some similarities to other groups like the Quakers and the Amish.
Oh,
and
I was confusing the Quakers with the Shakers.
Yeah, no, my understanding is that they are similar, but the Shakers, they were given their name because they were very lively during their religious services. But one thing that they are known for and something that we still sort of relate to them these days is that they became known for their high quality and durable furniture.
Okay.
And their sort of simple style of design, I guess.
Which also sounds very Amish to me, right?
Yeah.
Similarities.
But I guess specifically things that we know a Shaker style, again, like cabinet doors, they're very simple. They don't have a lot of decoration.
Isn't it also called mission style?
Those are slightly different.
Okay.
But they are similar. I will put a link to that because I don't remember the distinction, but there was something that came up in my research for this. I had to research this. This is not knowledge that just appears in my brain. Because in addition to the Shaker style door, they are credited with inventing or at least influencing the design of several other household objects. So I'm going to give you five. You tell me which is not the Shaker invention. Okay, you ready?
Yes.
The clothespin.
Oh my gosh, this is already hard. Okay, the clothespin's a good one.
The flat broom.
That's so specific, you wouldn't make it up.
The circular saw.
Feels like a plant.
Dentures.
I believe that because they were originally wooden, like George Washington's were made of wood.
And the swivel chair.
Oh, no, I feel like you think that's a misdirect, but it's really true. And it's some like really old chair that swivels. I'm going circular saw.
You are incorrect.
Oh, I know they're woodworkers. I just thought that sounded too different than like a clothespin, which is made of wood. A lot of them were made of wood. What was my second choice? Swivel chair.
Yeah, swivel chair is the fake.
Oh, I thought that was such a like a, you threw it in there to trick me.
That one is credited as being invented by Thomas Jefferson.
Who was not a Shaker.
No, actually the circular saw is the one that surprised me the most. I will say that there is some debate as to who actually invented it, because one of the problems, I guess, with shakers is that they were fairly humble, so they didn't patent any of their creations.
Oh.
But there is a story that links the circular saw to them because they worked a lot with wood and were looking for ways to make their lumber more efficient. And here's the really interesting thing. It was invented by a female shaker.
I love that. Yeah. What was her name?
Tabitha Babbitt.
That's awesome. She was a builder, or was she just an inventor?
The story I read is that she observed that the men working in the sawmill were very inefficient with their whip saws. You know, those big saw, like, picture yes. the stereotypical, like, sawing back and forth with two men on either side.
Right.
She noticed it was inefficient because it was only cutting in one direction. And so what she did was she actually kind of, it sounds like she kind of hacked her spinning wheel.
Oh, that's so
cool.
To
put a circular saw blade on it to make it more efficient. And then they added water power and turned it into this tool that we now know as a circular saw.
I like that. Go Tabitha. Clothespins. Wow, they invented lots of really big things, though, too.
Yeah, and I found a really long article about the history of the broom.
The flat broom. I was like, that's real.
Yeah, the flat broom is not a term I use. I'm not like, honey, will you grab the flat broom?
Exactly.
Okay, so next we're going to answer a listener question, right?
Yeah, so this one is not a voicemail to play. It actually was something that came through on Instagram from someone named KFunkB. And she said, love the podcast. I was wondering if you could talk about decorating for the seasons. Fall decor, Thanksgiving, holidays, etc. How do you feel about it? Do you reflect seasons and holidays in your home? Totally understand if it doesn't fit into the show. Just curious. Have a great day.
Well, this seems like an appropriate question given that we are like on the brink of hardcore holiday decorating.
We're in the thick of it to me because every store has had Christmas stuff out pretty much since Halloween stuff went away.
Home Depot's had it out forever.
People are pushing the boundaries. I remember growing up, I felt like it was specifically after Thanksgiving.
As someone who had a birthday in November, I had quite the affinity for Thanksgiving. I was very protective of it. I got very upset when people talked about Christmas before Thanksgiving because I was like, come on, guys.
What about November's holiday? Thanksgiving.
Anyways, to her question about decorating for the seasons, we certainly do decorate for seasons and holidays in our house. I wouldn't say we do it super intensely with the exception of maybe Christmas.
Yeah, I would say Christmas, we turn the dial to 8 out of 10. I mean, we do it in multiple rooms. The front of the house gets decorated. I'd say for Easter, we do a little Easter tree in the front where I take clipped branches and I put them in a vase and we hang little decorative eggs we got on it. They're like reusable every year. They're not like real eggs that we hollow out. I'd say Halloween's probably similar. We do some decorating. There's like a feathery black wreath that goes on the door. There's some pumpkins and stuff, which if they still live, get to stay there through Thanksgiving. If they start to rot, they meet a death in the woods. I don't know that there are many other holidays we decorate for.
No, and it's kind of funny thinking about when I grew up, my mom really did it for just about everything. Like, for instance, we had this big picture window in our kitchen. And I think for each month, she had a different theme for it in which she would cut out little like shamrocks in March or hearts in February or flowers in April. And she would tape them up to each of the panes. And so there was like this colorful decoration basically every month. She also later in my childhood had a themed string light for just about every holiday.
So it was like pumpkins.
It was like American flags around Memorial Day. Bust those out again around Labor Day.
I was going to say your mom like invented window clings before window clings were a thing.
Exactly.
She was like taping.
It was like construction paper and tape. Yeah.
Yeah. That's so sweet.
But I remember that very distinctly.
Is it generational or did we just have festive loving moms?
I don't think it's a generational thing because I think there's still plenty of people our age who probably go all out in their holiday decorating. I think we do some things more thoroughly than others. I think we kind of skip all those little holidays.
We don't like switch out all the decor and make everything green for the month of March.
I think one thing we do find ourselves doing more is decorating almost like for seasons and less for the holidays within those seasons. So I think if we looked at how we might tweak our house as we enter into the spring, you know, we might swap out some pillows or some of your decorative accessories or even some of the like flowers or greenery for things that feel brighter or springier.
Yeah, I would say that seasonally, some things I change are if we have open shelving, I might put some lighter glass or flowers out in the spring. And in the winter, I might be feeling sort of like I have a vase that's covered in like cable knit sweater. So it looks like a sweater vase. And I might get darker flowers. Like maybe in the winter, I get red alstroemeria. And in the spring, I get like pink or white. Another place besides open shelves is the mantle in the living room. I think I change that out seasonally. Is that a helicopter?
Or a plane.
Wonder if you're going to hear that. Oh, well, there's a helicopter going by. To some degree, it's sort of expected color schemes. Like in the spring, I like pinks and blues and light pastels. And in the winter, sometimes I like white and gold and silver. And fall is more of those rich, you know, browns and coppers and tans and reds. And you mentioned pillows, but I don't think I really do very much. Sometimes I might take the two blue pillows off the couch for the holidays and put two red ones there or something, but it's not super major. And if I'm doing a refresh of a room, I do think the seasons come into play. Like when we shot our kitchen, it's fall, and so I was really feeling like gold accessories. So even though we chose fixtures that are polished nickel, I brought in a lot of like gold. I basically went to Target and I bought all the gold things.
Well, I was going to say, I think part of that seasonal decorating is influenced by what is available at the stores, because each season's home decor stores have different things come out that have different moods that match those seasons. And you are inevitably going to pick up one, two, or in this case,
all the gold things. Yeah,
many things that then bring that mood back into our house.
That's an agree, but also disagree, because I don't think every season I go to the store and pick up new seasonal objects. I do think when we finish a room, we celebrate by getting a few new things for the room. And so redoing the kitchen made me want to get some new accents just like for the celebration of a finished, completed project. But I don't think like every spring I'm like, oh, it's time to buy some spring accessories. I do think what's at the store sometimes gives me ideas and influences me at home, because I might see vases, oh, they're doing a lot of white in the new year, and I'm always associating gold with it. Maybe I'll do more white. And so I'll go home and sort of root through all the things I have and do something with that.
I think one reason I like that we don't go crazy for every holiday is it's easier and like less chaotic. I mean, if you think about how the stores are always like on to the next thing and always switching out all their stuff, like there's a lot to do to keep up with all that. But if you just kind of let go of some of the holiday specific decorating and
if you want to. Because some people, like your mom, I would never say let go of it because she loves it.
No. I'm just saying if you're like feeling stressed, like you can't keep up with it.
Exactly.
If you want to still feel like you are adjusting your home for that time of year, think about the season, because those little adjustments will last you much longer. Like you can look like spring for 3 or 4 months. You can kind of do your fall winter thing and it can last you into January, February, maybe even March. And you don't have to go through those like post-Christmas doldrums of putting all the decorations away.
Exactly. Or you can do like an easy tweak. Like what we have on the porch for Halloween is this black feather wreath, all the pumpkins going on either side of the stairs. And then I put like, I have this old feather owl and a crow and, you know, like sort of darker figures that make it look spooky. And then when it's Thanksgiving, if the pumpkins are still alive, I leave the pumpkins and I take the crow and the owl off and I take the feather black wreath off the door. And suddenly it goes from looking like spooky, dark Halloween to just being like seasonal and fall appropriate.
And I also noticed another thing, because you were starting to look at your Christmas stuff the other day.
I'm so excited.
Is that I think a lot of our Christmas decorations are more winter season. Like you have a lot of white and metallic and textural things that aren't like all red and green and say joy and Merry Christmas all over them. So I think we, whether this was conscious or not, kind of gravitated towards seasonal Christmas decorations.
I do think I love red more than any other time at Christmas. So I do find myself buying, you know, like a red bottle brush tree or a red, I would love a red velvet something, like a runner for the table. And ordinarily in the spring, there's nothing about red that I would say that's my style. But something about Christmas makes me feel like, oh, it's so festive. I just want to add all the red, which I think is fine. I think you just should decorate the way that you want to decorate. And I think getting this question reminded me that some people do decorate for every holiday, like your mom, and it's fun, and it's fun for the kids. But I also think it shouldn't stress you out. So if you're like, oh my gosh, after Halloween, I have to put that all away and do Thanksgiving. And after that, I have to put that all away and do Christmas. And if it's too much, I think there also is this freedom in just saying like, it's my house, just has to make me happy. I don't have to do all the things and be like the most decorated house on the block.
And I think we've also become a bit more low key about it in recent years, because we've had so many years in our early relationship and the earlier days of our family and the earlier days of our homes where we were still collecting all of our holiday decorations. You know, you didn't have all the Christmas stuff that we have now. And now it's a lot less about like feeling like we have to go out and buy stuff and more just about putting out the things that we already have.
Yeah, I don't think I buy very much at all other than if there's some one or two new things. Like I think last year at Target, they had these really pretty bottle brush trees that were like light pink, sparkly, light green, and light blue. And those are like my favorite seasonal colors, even though I love red. Those were fun sort of I don't know. They feel like kind of a modern spin on Christmas to do this robin's egg blue. Everyone's doing green and red. But I didn't run out and buy all the ornaments and all the, you know, outdoor accessories. I think pretty much every year we decorate outside with the same stuff. We do the same wreaths in the windows. We do like lit branches down the stairs. We do a wreath on the front door. What else?
And some red lanterns on the steps.
Yes. We fill red lanterns with strings of lights and they glow. That's
yeah, but we've been doing that for like 4 or 5 years. So.
Yeah, we did it in the second house, right?
Yeah, that's when we started it. So we'll make sure in the show notes for this episode at younghouselove.com/podcast, we put in some links for some examples of the holiday or seasonal decorating we do. We've got a whole page full of them for you guys to look at if you want to look at what we've done in this house and some of our old houses. I think also, Sherry, on the show notes, this is a perfect place for a poll.
Oh, yeah.
Where we can ask people sort of how they feel, what they do in their own home in terms of do they decorate for all the holidays, for just a few holidays, do they just do the seasons, or do they not decorate much at all?
I like it. I can't wait to see what you guys say. So everybody take the poll so I don't feel like, oh, I have 4 people's results.
Yeah, we want a good update.
Yeah, we have to do an update with at least, I'd say we need at least 100 people to take the poll so we can do an update with a large enough sample for Scientific John over here to say that it counts.
Yes, exactly. It has to be statistically significant, guys. Well, we've got some more digging, but first we're going to take a quick break.
So you guys heard that this week's episode is brought to you by Handy Paint Products. You know, they're those red plastic painting accessories, and they have a special feature or two that make paint jobs go more smoothly.
They were invented by a guy named Mark Bergman. He's a DIYer who lives in Minnesota, and many of his ideas come from solving problems in his own life. But there was one feature he hadn't thought of.
When we designed the pail, we made it so that it was easy to clean. We didn't even have liners on the radar. And within 6-9 months of launch, there were enough contractors that said, boy, we'd really like liners. We don't like to clean up. They are made from 100% recycled plastic. So they're all, it's really water bottles. That's what makes up the liners. But we laugh because some people say, oh, I use a liner for 2 weeks before I throw it away and get a new one. Like, that's great. You know, you can rinse them out and do whatever you want.
I was relieved to hear Mark say that because we fessed up to him that we don't usually use the liners unless we're using primer.
Yeah, it's way more satisfying to let the paint dry and then peel it off in like one giant glob.
Totally. Well, you guys can pick up Handy Paint Products pretty much anywhere you buy paint. Benjamin Moore, Sherwin-Williams, or even your local home improvement store. And to read more about the Handy Paint Products, head over to this episode's show notes page at younghouselove.com/podcast. So I guess I should play the We're Digging music?
Let's do it. Today, what I'm digging might seem like a bleh, but I think it's one of those if you don't have it, and especially if you used to have it and then go to not having it, or you have it in your house, but you go to someone else's house and they don't have it, you really miss it. So what I'm digging is a faucet that has a pull-down feature. That's what we have. We love a single
bowl. We have now.
Yes.
We did not have that in our old kitchen. And our faucet was like a fixed, I mean, you could swivel it back and forth.
Right, but it had a fixed neck. So you had to place a bowl or a cup sort of in the exact spot of the sink where the radius of the neck would swivel to fill. And I was at a friend of ours' house and I was washing dishes to be nice and just like helping her tidy up without thinking about it, reached to pull her faucet down. It looked like I was grabbing the neck of her faucet. She does have a sprayer, but it doesn't quite work, which is funny because it reminds me of
ours didn't work.
I just feel like it's such a, it's something we use every day and are grateful for, even though we probably take it for granted and forget about it. And it's a nice update. Like if you're frustrated that you can't redo your kitchen, maybe getting a nice deep sink and a nicer faucet will make day-to-day use nicer until you can save up for the big kitchen.
The faucet was something that we thought a lot about in this kitchen. We talked about a bit in the reveal post for the new kitchen because we had originally thought about getting a bridge faucet, you know, those pretty ones that have like the 2 separate holes.
Right. They like float off of the counter, much like a bridge. The 2 pieces that touch the counter are lifted, like sort of like you're seeing the plumbing that would normally be hidden, but it's over the sink. And it's very traditional and lovely and elegant looking. And I wanted one.
Yeah.
But John convinced me, look, the only way bridge faucets work is they have 2 levers. There's hot and cold. So do you want to adjust the water with 2 hands all the time? Or would you rather, you know, just like pull up one lever and the placement of the lever makes it warm or cold or hot?
Yeah.
And I'm glad you convinced me you were totally right. I wanted pretty, but every day that I use it, it's very easy. And I appreciate function too. So I feel like it was a fine compromise. And it's still pretty. I mean, it's polished nickel.
Yeah, I really
so
like
it's
the
really
one
shiny.
We got. I'm really actually glad that we, well, I'm glad I stuck to my guns.
Right. You're glad you were stubborn and I caved, which is usually the dynamic.
My stubbornness paid off. No, because I really like the faucet we got and it has a built-in pull-down sprayer, which again, we didn't have a sprayer in our old faucet. And so it has been a huge functional improvement. And can I say one other thing?
Yes.
Is some people asked if we got one of those touch faucets.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that because they make faucets now where you can just touch somewhere on it and it turns on.
Which we
off.
Had in our first house.
Yeah, we had one in our first house. And I really liked it. I'll admit, I really liked it. I got used to it when we didn't have it anymore and we moved. I like had to break myself.
Yeah, tapping the faucet and it wouldn't turn
on. This one doesn't work.
Yeah.
And we thought about getting one here. And I think ultimately we just decided it wasn't a feature that we needed so badly that we should pay the extra.
I think my reasoning to you, and I still stand by this, was when people visited and guests were here, they didn't know how to use it. And so there was a lot of my mom like, oh, it turned off. Because if you hold it, there's a grasp and there's a tap.
Yeah. And it also usually requires that you leave it on, like you pull the lever open so that it's on.
Right. And then when you tap it, it turns on. So my mom would pull the lever and turn it off and then tap it and it wouldn't turn on. And people visiting would, you know, the kids would have something in their hands. And I think actually the thing that people recommended that would have been such a maybe a even more luxurious upgrade that sometimes I do wish I got is people were saying, oh, if you drink tea a lot, you should have gotten one of those instant hot water nozzles. And that would have been nice because I drink more hot liquids. Remember, guys, hot car. I love all things hot, even in the middle of summer.
And I do think we would have liked having the touch feature again. I'm sure we wouldn't have regretted doing it, but it just didn't, with all the stuff going on, didn't seem like a necessary feature at this point.
It was sort of like a medium, right? We didn't do the bridge faucet with two handles, but we did the one handle, which is easier, but we didn't do touch.
Well, it's funny that actually we got onto the topic of these touch faucets and sort of automating things because my we're digging has to do with home automation.
Which you love.
Which I love. Like I am a smart home admirer. But I am not myself an early adopter of things, so we don't actually own a lot of smart home features. I mean,
we had the first generation Nest.
Yeah, we do have a Nest thermostat, and I did get that smart irrigation controller.
Right. I don't think you were like one of those who gets everything. Like, you don't have the Philips color-changing bulbs and all the
No. But I feel like I'm approaching the brink where some of these voice-controlled hubs, like the Amazon Alexa or the Google Home, are like almost at my threshold of early adopting, where I'm starting to think about them. Most because one of my friends, whom I work with at the ad agency that I freelance for, she got a Google Home recently. And we were actually yesterday went to a meeting up in DC where we had to give a presentation. And on the way back, we were talking in the car and I was asking her about it because she had shared it on Facebook. I was like, do you really like your Google Home? And she could not stop raving about it. And so I was like, what do you actually use it for? Because I see all these like commercials and I'm sort of like, that all sounds nice, but like day to day, how often I'm really like, how many
quarts are in a gallon?
Exactly.
It's always their example. If you're cooking, you can ask it measurements. But I'm like, well, every once in a while I have that, but not every day.
So when I asked her what she used it for, she said actually when she's cooking, she uses it because she will say like, at what temperature should I roast chicken or something? And it will tell her and it will send a recipe to her phone.
Wow.
And so it actually comes up on her device and then she can save it to some folder from there. It can read her email or things off of her Google Calendar, or she keeps grocery lists doing that. She also said they have a whole home speaker system, which is not something we have, but she likes it because she can walk in the door and say, play whatever playlist. And it will like play her Pandora list or something from her phone. And she can even say, play it in this room or play it in the kitchen or play it in her bedroom. So it just got me curious. But as I told her, like, I'm still not sure it like floats to the need to have or even super want to have for me. I can't convince myself that just being able to play music easier is enough of a reason to get it.
Right.
But I'm sure there's lots of people out there who are fans of these things and have them. So I would love to hear some more input on this. If you have like a Google Home or if you have one of those Amazon Echoes or whatever they're called, if you like it, how you use it, like has it changed your home life in dramatic ways or do you find yourself not really using it?
What this is John asking is convince him to buy this home device so he can play with it.
Justify my purchase or justify a Christmas gift to me.
Yeah, and I would be interested to hear who has what and who likes what better. And so if you're contemplating buying one from Amazon or the Google Home, you can go to the show notes and hopefully in the poll, it can be seen whether more people have one or the other and rave about it and love it, and it might help making the purchase easier.
Yeah, so maybe that is another poll that I'll put in the show notes to see who has these, which ones they have, and whether they like them or not. Pretty soon I'll just have to say, like, Alexa, record podcast.
And it will do all the work for us.
Yep, we can just stand in our kitchen and chat.
If ever there was a week to be thankful that you guys listened, this is it. So thanks for listening to Young House Love Has a Podcast.
And hey, if you know anyone who still hasn't given podcasts a try, this is a great week to suggest this one or any other podcast you like. Whether they're making a Thanksgiving road trip, going to be stuck at the airport, or maybe need some extra company in the kitchen while they stuff a turkey.
And thanks for sharing what you guys do while you listen. Like Castagno Fam on Instagram, who told us she listened while laying in bed trying to pass a kidney stone.
See, podcasts are great for any occasion. And check out younghouselove.com/podcast for all the bonus links, photos, and info from this episode. And polls. There are also polls.
Plus, you can see all the stuff I've been sourcing for my mom's new place.
Happy Thanksgiving, everyone.
Also, Invisalign update. No. I have elastics.
No, you've reached full reversion back to a teenager.
I really
have. But you don't get to pick the colors.
They're just clear.
You all have
They're blank.
Thanksgiving colors. Black and brown.
I bet it'd look awesome.